Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Just yesterday, United States Customs and Border Patrol moved almost 300 children from a migrant detention center in Clint, Texas. The transfer just came days after lawyers and doctors visited the center last week. They were so shocked by what they saw, they decided to go public. Babies without enough food, children as young as seven being told to take care of infants they don't know, children in soiled clothes being forced to sleep on cold concrete floors with the lights on 24 hours a day. Most, if not all of these children have family in the United States, but the government has detained them for days, sometimes weeks beyond what's legally allowed. This hour on Point, two eyewitnesses describe what they saw at child detention facilities at the U.S. border. And you can join us. What is your reaction to hearing about the harsh conditions children are being kept in? What needs to be done to solve this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us now from New York is Ilora Mukherjee. She is the director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School. Last week, she and a team of lawyers, doctors, and interpreters visited migrant detention facilities, including the one in Clint, Texas. The attorneys were monitoring government compliance with that 1997 Flores settlement, which regulates the treatment of children in immigration detention. Ilora Mukherjee, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
So first of all, these children who were moved by CBP just yesterday, many of whom were the same children you saw last week, do we know where they are now?
We are trying to confirm where the children are now. We have been told that many of these children, 249 of them, have been moved to other Customs and Border Patrol facilities. We also understand that a number of them, maybe all of them, will be transferred to the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, so ORR shelters. A number of the children, we learned, have been sent to another CBP processing center in El Paso, so another facility run by Customs and Border Patrol agents. Members of our team went there last week to interview children, and we learned that the conditions there also raise serious concerns. The children who my colleagues interviewed did not have access to toothbrushes, had not showered until the day my colleagues arrived. The lights are on 24 hours a day. There are no beds, there are no mats, and children are sleeping on concrete floors, and they are hungry there as well.
Laura, if I just may clarify one thing. So are you and the legal team that visited these facilities, are you technically counsel for these children?
No.
Okay.
We are monitoring compliance with the 1997 agreement in the Flores case. So we interview the children to assess whether the federal government is following the law, which requires children to be in CBP facilities for no longer than 72 hours and provides for basic safe and sanitary conditions for the children in federal immigration custody.
Now, here's why I ask, because does anyone outside of Customs and Border Protection know where these children are?
We are trying to investigate that as rapidly as possible.
Okay. So I guess the answer is, as of this time, the answer is no, as of this moment. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's where this stands. Do you believe that that CBP moved these children yesterday as a response or as an action in response to you and several members of the legal team who went public late last week to what you told the world that you saw?
Yes, the conditions were the most degrading and inhumane conditions I have ever seen. And I have been representing asylum-seeking children and their families in detention facilities since 2007. This is unacceptable and should not be happening in America. When we arrived at the facility in Clint on Monday morning, we were told that there were more than 350 children detained there. It is a facility that is designed for adults and has a capacity just over 100. We were told on Tuesday morning that about 100 children had been transferred out. And then on Wednesday morning, we were told the same thing. And it is critically important for the American public to understand what is happening in our name.
The government knew you were coming, though, right? They knew for several weeks that this team of attorneys and interpreters and medical professionals were coming as part of continued monitoring of Flores.
That's correct. The government had 3 weeks' notice that we planned to visit Clint, and the on-the-ground staff, guards at Clint, knew we were coming a week in advance. And as a result, they cleaned up the facility before we arrived. Some children bathed for the first time while we were there last week. Some children who had been held incommunicado without a single opportunity to make a phone call since crossing the border were allowed their first phone calls.
But even with that, though, what's been reported, what you and your legal colleagues have been saying over the past several days is shocking. I mean, can you just tell us more in detail about what you saw? One of your colleagues has told a couple of news outlets that, for example, when interviewing a child who was being told to take care of another child, the infant had no diapers and was sitting there. And in the process of the conversation of the interview, because the child had inadequate clothing, just urinated right where the child was sitting.
That's true. We saw children who were hungry, who were dirty, who were sick, and who were terrified and who have been detained for days and weeks and some nearly a month. The children consistently reported that they did not have enough food to eat. The ration of food given to the children is the same. Everyone gets the same tray, regardless of if they're 1 year old or 17-year old, regardless of if they're a breastfeeding mother who needs additional calories. The children were dirty. Most of them had not showered since crossing the border. The overwhelming majority of them were wearing the same clothing that they crossed the border in. So their clothes were stained in bodily fluids, nasal mucus, urine, breast milk for the teenage moms who are breastfeeding. And when I interview children in immigration detention, I typically try to sit close to them so that I can try to build some rapport while we're talking about the most sensitive and traumatic topics possible. And I found that hard to do with some of the children last week because there was a stench in the facility. The children have no access to soap to wash their hands. Most of them had not brushed their teeth once since crossing the border. The few who had opportunities to brush their teeth did so for the first time last week.
We're hearing that there are influenza and lice outbreaks in the facilities as well, and that at least in one case, children were told after being given some lice shampoo to share a nit-removing comb, and they were punished when one of those combs were lost?
That's exactly right. So about 20 girls were held in one of these cages, one of these holding cells, and two of the girls had lice, and the guards gave them two nit combs so that they could comb out the hair, not just of those two girls, but they were ordered to share those two combs and comb out the hair of all 20 girls. Now, this is exactly the opposite of what you're supposed to do when a person has lice. They are not supposed to share their combs with anyone, but the girls were told that they all had to share those same two combs. In the process, the girls lost one of the combs. When the guards found out, they were enraged, and the guards ordered the girls to find the combs and said that if the comb was not found, the girls would lose their very thin blankets and the mats that they sleep on. And that is, in fact, what happened. The kids could not find that comb and the blankets. The limited blankets and mats that were in that cell were taken out. All the girls had to sleep on the concrete floor that night. And we repeatedly heard from children that there are not sufficient beds or mats for children to sleep on and that they are sleeping on concrete floors. Even in the holding cells, where there seem to be bunk beds, the children are reluctant to sleep there because the temperatures are so cold. And children told me that if you sleep on the beds, you are freezing cold at night. And as a result, a number of the children try to huddle together on the floor to stay warm.
Did you see evidence that the government is breaking the law?
Absolutely. In 2008, the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act was passed unanimously by both houses and signed by President George W. Bush. That law is explicit and clear that children cannot be detained in CBP custody for any longer than 72 hours. Every child who I met with was detained at Clint for longer than 72 hours. And for all of the children I met, CBP was not their first stop in Clint was not their first stop in CBP custody. Children had been to one CBP facility beforehand or two CBP facilities beforehand. So that 72-hour limit is not being respected. In addition, the Flores Settlement Agreement from 1997 requires that children be released from federal immigration custody as expeditiously as possible. We learned from CBP that it has no mechanisms for releasing these children to their family members. Every child we spoke with, and probably every child detained in that facility, has family members in the United States who are desperate to be reunited with their beloved children.
And yet CBP is telling you they have no mechanism to connect these children with their family members in the United States.
That's right. And most of the children had not been permitted to make a single phone call since crossing the border. The Flores Agreement also provides for safe and sanitary conditions in federal immigration custody. And the administration is in flagrant violation of that provision.
Well, Ilora Mukherjee, stand by for just a moment. She's director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at the Columbia Law School. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about conditions inside detention facilities run by Customs and Border Protection that are currently housing hundreds of migrant children. Ilora Mukherjee is part of a legal team that visited some of those facilities along the U.S. border in just the past week or two. She's director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School, and she's part of a legal team, again, that visited facilities in Clint, Texas last week. And before the break, we also mentioned the fact that earlier this month, on June 18th, in fact, so just a couple of days ago, in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Department of Justice lawyer Sarah Fabian argued before the judicial panel that withholding basic toiletries does not violate the federal government's responsibility to provide, quote, safe and sanitary conditions to detained children. And here you will listen to DOJ lawyer Sarah Fabian again being questioned by Judge A. Wallace Tashima.
It's within everybody's common understanding that, you know, if you don't have a toothbrush, if you don't have soap, if you don't have a blanket, it's not safe and sanitary. Well, wouldn't everybody agree to that? Do you agree to that?
Well, I think those are, there's fair reason to find that those things may be part of safe and sanitary?
No, maybe. Are part. What do you say, maybe? You mean there are circumstances when a person doesn't need to have a toothbrush, toothpaste, and soap for days?
Well, I think in CBP custody, it's frequently intended to be much shorter term. So it may be that for a shorter term stay in CBP custody, that some of those things may not be required.
That's Sarah Fabian, a lawyer for the Department of Justice, arguing before a panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Issue is that these children not only are staying in terrible conditions, they're staying there for much longer than legally required. Allura Mukherjee, hang on here for just a second, because I want to hear now from Dr. Dolly Lucio Severe. Dr. Severe is a pediatrician in Brownsville, Texas. She was asked by lawyers to visit the Ursula Detention Facility in McAllen, Texas, after a flu outbreak there sent at least 5 infants to the hospital. Dr. Severe visited on June 15th. She wrote up a medical declaration that was later obtained by ABC News. And in that declaration, Dr. Severe said, quote, "The conditions within which the children are held could be compared to torture facilities." Well, we spoke with Dr. Severe a little bit earlier today, and we began by asking her to describe the things that she saw that will stay with her the most.
Definitely what impacted me the most was the inability of the mothers to wash their infants' formula bottles. I think what I think over and over after seeing that was, if a parent told me that in my exam room, I'd be very concerned about their conditions at home and consider calling CPS to get them some support. That was what was most alarming to me.
So not being able to even rinse the bottles out after using them for days and days?
They rinse with water that's supposed to be used for drinking in a bathroom sink that does not have running water. And they have no soap. So they're being rinsed, yes.
Okay. You were able to interview or see almost 40 children. How many of them were sick?
2/3 of them were sick. Many of those had recently had contracted influenza specifically, but about 2/3 had respiratory illnesses.
You've also said and written that you feel that the sanitary or unsanitary conditions at the processing center, the fact that children couldn't wash their hands or brush their teeth, amounted to an intentional spreading of disease?
They're clearly having issues with outbreaks. They've reported it themselves. They've closed some centers because of that. And I think it's pretty clear human understanding that washing your hands reduces spread of infection. I asked several mothers if there was any hand sanitizer around specifically when they were all denying soap and water. And I pointed to my hand sanitizer I brought along and they said, yeah, those are for the guards.
Now, you've been widely quoted once your medical affidavit made it out to the media as saying that what you saw were conditions within which could be compared to torture facilities. Why did you say that?
I believe there are a lot of ways that you can torture a human, and definitely demoralizing their spirit by not allowing them to keep clean, keeping them uncomfortably cold for weeks, keeping the lights on 24 hours in a warehouse, keeping them inside of a cage for weeks. Yes, I believe all of that can really get into a person's psyche and torture them emotionally, which is no less than physical torture, in my opinion.
Have you ever seen anything like this in your practice so far?
No, not like this.
How old was the youngest child that you saw?
2.5 months. I'd been born in Mexico on mom's way here.
2.5 months?
2.5 months old, yes.
Did any of the children show signs of psychological harm or trauma? And are you concerned that that trauma could last?
Yes, I think all of the children had signs of trauma, every single one. I mean, I see kids all day long, and, you know, an 18-month-old should not want you to examine them, and they should scream and pull away and go to their mother, and, you know, a 2-year-old should be a little bit fearful and then willing to talk. But they were all inappropriately subdued. I mean, they clearly were very fearful of me, but completely let me do my entire physical exam without any fight, which was entirely inappropriate for their age and stage of behavior. The infants without their parents, of course, were obviously far worse. You know, they came with daycare workers that were in the facility that they were had become attached to, but they repeated the same statements. Two of the girls interviewed at different times said, my dad's getting the papers, my dad's getting the papers, my dad's getting the papers, over and over. Almost when I asked any question, that's what they responded. There was another child who was also without any parent who was just panting the entire time I saw him. And I asked the daycare worker, has he been sick? She said, no, he just started doing this when he came. But of course, it was just another more high stressful situation. So, and yes, I believe they're being traumatized and will suffer lasting damage.
Also, in your report, you said that you respectfully submit that no child should be held in these facilities for even 72 hours, even though that's what's allowed by the law. So what, I mean, you want them to get out of there, but what is it that you think should be done immediately right now or next steps?
I think to be done realistically immediately to help their situation is that they could appoint a physician at some of these facilities who's there specifically for the well-being of the children. I believe that any physician would see that these children need soap, the bottles need to be washed. I'm not asking for perfection, but there are a lot of very small, non-expensive things that can be done to make the conditions better in these facilities. The lights could be dimmed at night instead of all the way off. You know, there are children who really are separated from their parents without even teen parents that are toddlers that could be better taken care of. That they could be expedited a lot more quickly to get out of these places and have priority for ORR. But I think that it's clear that no one is taking the well-being of these children into any sort of priority in the decision-making here. You know, it feels like cattle call. It feels like they're animals and we're getting them through. There's no human decency. There's no human dignity. There's nothing, you know, that needs to be considered besides keep them in this space until we put them in another space.
Dr. Dolly Lucio-Severe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Dr. Severe visited the Ursula Detention Facility in McAllen, Texas on June 15th. She spoke to us a little earlier today from Brownsville, Texas. Ilora Mukherjee, let me turn back to you here. Who is making the decisions to treat the children this way?
This is the administration's position on how children should be treated. It is the government's position that children do not need toothbrushes, soap, adequate sleeping conditions, including a bed, when they are in federal immigration custody. As your listeners heard a little while ago, that is what DOJ, the Department of Justice lawyer Sarah Fabian, argued in federal court just this week. So from the CBP officials who are on the ground working at this facility to the highest levels of this administration, it is this administration's position that children deserve degrading and inhumane conditions.
But, I mean, obviously, if the president decided to change his mind, things might change. Could a different decision come from lower down in the ranks? Could the attorney general change his position? I mean, this seems to what you're implying is that there's a cascade of intentional decision making that's leading to children being forced to sleep on concrete floors in refrigerator type conditions with the lights on for 24 hours a day in the same clothes that they've been wearing for weeks on end with very little food. Is that what you're saying?
That is the government's position. The Flores case, the litigation on the Flores case began in the early 1980s. A settlement was reached in 1997 that is very clear about the conditions that children deserve to be treated in. And across the border, there has been litigation challenging the conditions in which children are held. And it is this administration's position that children don't deserve basic human decency.
May I ask you, how are the guards in the facility in Clint, Texas, how are they dealing with this?
It was hard to have one-on-one conversations with the guards because when they were on duty to monitor us and the children who we were interviewing, they were typically working in pairs. I saw guards in full uniforms with weapons around their waists. I saw guards in face masks to protect themselves from the flu epidemic. And it's really disturbing to see the conditions there. The children are terrified of the guards. The guards yell at the children. Some of the guards speak Spanish, but some don't. So when the guards are yelling in English, the children don't know what they're saying. We heard reports of guards using physical force against children, including one guard who dragged a young boy by the back of his neck outside of the holding cell that the children were in, and the children in the holding cell never saw him again. The children are too scared to ask for more food when they are hungry, and so hungry that they're waking up at night. We've heard reports of children being unable to use the toilets when they need to because guards are prohibiting their access to the toilets.
Well, we did reach out to the Department of Homeland Security to see if anyone would join us or if they would respond to our request for comment. They declined, but they did send us a statement. It is the same statement that they have sent to multiple media outlets. And Ilora, if I may, I want to read the entirety of it to you because it's the only official voice of the federal government that we have right now. So Customs and Border Patrol, in its statement, says, quote, U.S. Customs and Border Protection leverages our limited resources to provide the best care possible to those in our custody, especially children. As DHS and CBP leadership have noted numerous times, our short-term holding facilities were not designed to hold vulnerable populations, and we urgently need the additional humanitarian funding to manage this crisis. CBP works closely with our partners at the Department of Health and Human Services to transfer unaccompanied children to their custody as soon as placement is identified, and as quickly and expeditiously as possible to ensure proper care. All allegations of civil rights abuses or mistreatment in CBP detention are taken seriously and investigated to the fullest extent possible. End quote. But Ilora, there's one line in particular I want to ask you about where CBP says they work closely with the Department of Health and Human Services to transfer unaccompanied children to HHS custody. But were these children unaccompanied when they arrived at the border?
Every child who we spoke with crossed the border with a family member, a sibling over the age of 18, an aunt, a grandmother, a parent, and all of those family units were torn apart by CBP, which then designated the children under 18 as unaccompanied minors. The children who were separated, by and large, have no idea where their family members are, who they crossed the board with, because they're being held for, by and large, incommunicado. In the Miss L litigation, which is challenging the family separation policy, the government recently was forced to disclose the following data. Between last June, when separations of parent-child units was supposed to have ended, and this May, more than 700 parent-child units were torn apart at the border. That number does not include the many family units that were separated because CBP, the federal government, doesn't consider that children who are being cared for by their beloved grandmother constitute a family unit. Children who are being cared for by an older sibling or an aunt or an uncle, those family units are not considered families by our federal government. And so all of those children are taken away from their adult loved ones at the border.
Is it because CBP officials cannot verify whether or not the adults who are with these children are actual family members? Or is it, as you seem to be implying, it's just policy that if it's not a parent, the person is not considered a member of the family?
It appears to be policy. The separation of family units takes place across the border on a daily basis and has for years. We met with children. I met with three siblings, ages 4, 8, and 12, who crossed the border with their grandmother. They call her abuelita. Their grandmother had a piece of paper, a document signed by the children's parents, giving custody of the children to the grandmother for the time that they were in immigration detention and begging that the children be allowed to stay with their grandmother. The CBP officials took that paper away and tore the grandmother away from these three young children. The children have no idea where their grandmother is now or whether they will see her again.
Well, we have to take a break here in just a minute. But for listeners who may not have heard from the top, Ilora Mukherjee is a part of a legal team that visited migrant detention centers just in the past week or two, particularly one in Clint, Texas. And she's giving us a firsthand account of what she saw inside there and how children are being treated there. Just yesterday, Customs and Border Protection moved just under 300 of those children out of that Clint, Texas facility. And Ilora, just to ask you again for folks who may not have heard at the top, you still don't know where those children, you can't confirm 100% where those children have been moved to.
We don't know. We're trying to investigate that right now.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll take your calls. What's your reaction to hearing how children are being treated by Customs and Border Protection in these migrant detention facilities? What do you think should be done to solve this? This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're hearing this hour an eyewitness account of what a lawyer and earlier a doctor saw inside of Customs and Border Protection detention facilities housing migrant children. Ilora Mukherjee joins us today from New York. She's the director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School. She is part of that legal team that visited Border Patrol facilities in Clint, Texas, just last week. She's been telling us what she's been seeing. And Ilora, if I may, I just need to bring in a couple of callers here. They've been waiting very patiently. So let's go to William, who's calling from Reading, Massachusetts. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. I'm calling as a pastor and as a foster parent. My wife and I have been foster parents for about 2 years. We're connected to a bunch of other foster parents in the area. And we were talking this week. We have all cared for children in our homes through domestic foster care that have been removed from their families for less than what is being inflicted upon these children at the border. It is abundantly clear that this administration and Customs and Border Patrol are not fit guardians of children. These children must be reunited with their families in the United States as soon as possible today. It is a moral crisis that there are people who think that this treatment is acceptable. I would also hope that these children and their families receive ongoing support. The trauma that these children have suffered in being removed from their families, in being placed in these inhumane conditions, is going to follow them for their entire lives. It's going to affect their ability to learn at school. It is going to affect their ability to learn to trust people, to form relationships and attachments that are healthy, that are the most basic foundation of having a successful and productive life.
Yeah. Well, William, thank you so much for your call. Let's get another view. Let's go to Scott, who's calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Scott, you're on the air.
Hello. My concern is the administration, I think, is abundantly clear trying to make sure that these children are really with those adults. I think we have to get fast DNA tests. I think we've got to ensure that they are really a family member that's come to claim them. If they're not, if the DNA does not match, I think that person should be charged as a coyote, a child predator, a child sex molester, because I've seen reports that some of these children coming back across the second and third time and getting claimed, attempted to be claimed by another adult that's not even the same adult that tried to claim them the last time. So I think, how horrible would it be that you release a child to an uncle or an aunt or a grandmother or whatever they want to call them, and it turns out they're coyotes?
Mm. Hey, Scott, I hadn't heard that. Where are you seeing those reports?
That's widespread reports from Department of Homeland Security, Border Patrol has, and these are Hispanic Border Patrol people that have told the stories. It's do an internet search. I've seen it.
Okay, well, Scott, thank you for your call. Ilora Mukherjee, let me just ask you to your response to what Scott's saying. Are there reports of children crossing multiple times and each time different people claiming familial relationships with them?
I have not heard those reports. Like you, I haven't seen them. What we do know is that children are crossing the border with their parents and other family members, and they bring with them documented proof of the familial relationship, including birth certificates, and family units continue to be torn apart.
Mm. Well, I want to bring into the conversation now Nick Miroff. He's joining us from Washington. He's a national security correspondent who covers immigration enforcement, drug trafficking, and the Department of Homeland Security for The Washington Post. Nick Miroff, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions in a minute about Congress's role in all of this. But I understand just recently you visited the central processing facility for CBP in McAllen, Texas. Is that right?
That's right. And before I get into that, I do want to say that your last caller was correct. There have been some signs so far that there are a limited number of cases of people arriving with children who are not their own. That is why DHS is trying to expand rapid DNA testing in cases where that is suspected. It's a problem we are seeing, unfortunately, as the volume of people coming across the border bringing children grows.
Okay, I see. So that's an interesting point. But we still also have this issue of the hundreds of children who have been in CBP detention for weeks now, much longer than the 72 hours mandated by the Flores Agreement.
Yeah, I don't think that that is the norm at this point, but certainly many children, many underage, what the government calls unaccompanied alien children or UACs are in fact spending longer than 72 hours in the facility that I visited with a large delegation, including the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, the Foreign Minister of Guatemala, and the First Ladies of Guatemala and Honduras. On Thursday in McAllen, Texas, I personally spoke to some teenage boys, for example, from El Salvador, who said they had been in there 4 or 5 days. One of them began crying and said that he wanted to go home to his mother. It was it was as bad as I've ever seen. I had visited that facility before, but on Thursday when we were there, there were more than 2,000 people. That is the facility that that some of your listeners will remember for its cage like holding pens with chain link dividers. And they were far more, crowded than I've ever seen, and certainly beyond their capacity. It was a very grim scene in there.
Mm. Well, so Nick and Ilora, I just want to take a moment to play some tape from both. You'll hear the Vice President of the United States and then Democratic congressional response, because in Washington, a lot of the discussion right now, and there are urgent discussions happening both in the Senate and the House about whether appropriations and more money, as the administration says it's been asking for, can help solve this urgent problem. So here on Sunday on CNN's State of the Union, host Jake Tapper pressed Vice President Mike Pence about the conditions we've been talking about at that Clint Detention Center in Texas.
Democrats in Congress refuse to expand the bed space and the capacity for us to detain
people.
This
is going on right now.
Borders. It's one of the reasons why we continue to call on Congress to give DHS, Customs and Border Protection, additional resources at the border.
But this is the wealthiest nation in the world. We have money to give toothpaste and soap and blankets to these kids in this facility in El Paso County. Right now we do.
Of course we do.
So why aren't we?
My point is, it's all a part of the appropriations process.
Vice President Mike Pence on CNN's State of the Union on Sunday. Well, California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff told Jake Tapper again on Sunday that President Trump, he believes, is wrong to blame Congress for all of these issues with undocumented children and asylum seekers.
There is nothing that Congress is doing or not doing that compels the administration to have facilities where children don't have blankets or toothbrushes or soap. And for the vice president or the president to blame Congress for their own malfeasance is just completely besides the point and unethical and unacceptable. They could cure this problem today, but they don't want to because, frankly, the cruelty is part of their policy.
Congressman Adam Schiff from California, the Democrat from California. Nick Muroff, where is the current appropriations request that the vice president is talking about? It's passed through the Senate Appropriations Committee and lots of conversations going on, but what's happening?
Well, that's right. I mean, we saw last week a 30-1 vote to advance this this supplemental bill. It is going to have a much harder time in the House, but there does seem to be genuine momentum for the first time in recent memory towards some kind of bipartisan vote in favor of some, you know, border action, which unfortunately is the state of affairs right now, where it is so difficult to even get additional funding to help improve, you know, conditions for children and people being held in CBP custody. Of that, you know, $4.6 billion that is under discussion right now, the majority of that would go to Health and Human Services, which is going to run out of money. One of the reasons we're seeing so many children exceeding the 72-hour period, and so many minors, you know, going over that court mandated limit, is that Health and Human Services is not taking the children into custody fast enough, and so they are going to run out of money. They are facing capacity issues. The whole infrastructure of the, you know, essentially border enforcement and detention is overwhelmed, and that money is definitely badly needed.
I'm seeing here, though, that, I mean, and this is all sort of happening virtually as we speak, that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has met with members of the progressive and Hispanic caucuses in the House and proposing a set of changes to that $4.5 billion package that would include requiring CBP to establish health standards for children and adults, etc. And they would also require DHS to submit a plan to ensure that all migrants have access to translation services, amongst others. I'm also seeing here that there's the potential, if this does pass Congress, that the White House says it may veto this bill. Is that right?
I had not seen that threat from the White House, but I don't see at this point how, after, you know, statements like that from Vice President Pence, they would be able to reject, a bipartisan bill in favor of additional border funding.
So, Ilora Mukherjee, you're an advocate for these children. Do you think that the appropriations bill, if it's passed and signed, could help solve this urgent problem?
It remains to be seen. We need to investigate each of the CBP facilities where children and adults are being held for prolonged periods of time. Money alone won't solve the problem. We need to treat people with basic human dignity and empathy and recognize that the overwhelming majority of these children are asylum seekers and are eligible for special immigrant juvenile status. They're fleeing the worst traumas imaginable, and we deserve to treat them with basic human decency.
Let's take a call here. Margarita is calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Margarita, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to express my outrage about the treatment of those children. These are concentration camps in the literal sense of the word. And I wonder, where is the outcry of the international community? I can't believe that America doesn't have enough money to give them soap and toothpaste. And these children are being damaged for the rest of their lives. These are crimes against humanity. That's all I have to say.
Well, Margarita, thank you for your call. Let's go to Craig, who's calling from Onalaska, Wisconsin. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm outraged. I am in favor of very stringent enforcement of immigration laws. I am not a Trump voter. I never would vote for him. But I do believe in strong enforcement of laws. That being said, these children are in the situation where if any health care provider in the United States would see this, they would be required by law to report it as child abuse. I would like to see somebody in the medical field report this to at least the state of Texas for enforcement of its laws. This is absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, Craig, thank you for your call. Ilora Mukherjee, is that happening?
So under the Flores Settlement Agreement, once children are transferred to the custody of ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, those facilities are subject to state licensing requirements and subject to state laws that govern child welfare. Because this Clint facility is in under the auspices of the Customs and Border Protection officials, it is not clear that the licensing requirement applies, but I agree with the caller that we all need to take as much action as possible to shine light on the horrors taking place at these facilities and to demand investigations, whether it be by state officials, federal officials, and by the media and the American public.
Well, just to be sure that we're clear on the facts here, we do see that the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said about the appropriations bill that it's, quote, an appropriations bill to meet the needs of our children. She said, as she said to her members, we have a country where every child knows that they are in their parents' arms. Literally or figuratively, we are the arms of these children. That's what the House Speaker said. But on Monday, the White House issued a statement that indeed threatened that the president would veto the House bill because, quote, it does not provide adequate funding to meet the current crisis and, quote, contains partisan provisions designed to hamstring the administration's border enforcement efforts. And that is why in the letter, in the statement, quote, the administration opposes its passage. So, Nick Miroff, I mean, things are changing rather quickly here, but even as the vice president says, we need the appropriations, the White House is issuing statements saying they don't like the way this bill is shaping up as we speak.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the interplay over how this will go forward. But, you know, at this point, if there is a building consensus towards some sort of supplemental funding package, I can't see how they would, end up walking away from this deal.
Ilora Mukherjee, we've got so many detailed questions coming in from our listeners. Several folks have written in and called asking, are these facilities run by for-profit corporations, the ones that you visited?
The ones that I visited in Clint last week are run by the federal government, by the agency called Customs and Border Protection, which is under the auspices of the Department of Homeland Security. There are many, many other detention centers that are run by private for-profit corporations, including the facility in Homestead that makes a profit of $775 per day for every child detained there. But the Clint facility is exclusively run by the government.
Well, Ilora Mukherjee, director of the Immigrant Rights Clinic at Columbia Law School. She's part of the legal team that visited the CBP facility in Clint, Texas, just last week. Ilora, thank you so much for joining us. And if you could, when you find out where those children have been moved to, will you let us know?
Thank you, Magna.
And Nick Miroff, a national security correspondent covering immigration enforcement, drug trafficking, and the Department of Homeland Security for The Washington Post. Nick, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
And we should note once more that we did contact the Department of Homeland Security for someone to join us. They did not respond to our request for comment. They did send us a statement from Customs and Border Control, and we will have a copy of that statement online at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.